Everything is obvious once you know the answer. That's the name of a book written by Dr. Duncan Watts, Principal Research Scientist at Yahoo Research. It's out now, and its subtitle is How Common Sense Fails Us. Now, by way of brief introduction, Dr. Watts argues that our tendency to use common sense to try and understand the world and to steer a future course often ends in disaster. I'll let him explain why. Duncan Watts.
Common sense is a wonderful device for helping us make sense of the world. So whatever happens in our daily lives, we can always look back on the outcomes that we've experienced and we can reconcile them with something we thought we already knew. Whenever we look at even very complex situations like the global financial crisis, for example, you know, we look back in time and it seems obvious to us that this thing was inevitable. It seems obvious to us that we were in a real estate bubble. It seems obvious to us that mortgage practices in the United States and other countries were too lax, that the bundling of mortgages into securities was and the leveraging of the banks and all of these were sort of practices were obviously wrong and were obviously going to lead inevitably to some sort of major disaster. And so when we look back in time, we think, oh, if only we had been paying attention to the things that now seem obvious to us, if only we'd used our common sense, we could have avoided this catastrophe. But the problem with that, you know, hindsight view of the world is that these things that now seem so self-evident to us, we couldn't have known at the time that those were the things that we should have been paying attention to. Because the truth is that at the time, there were many, many things to pay attention to. Some of them are the signals that now seem important, but there were plenty of other signals around as well. And for everyone who was warning us of a crisis, there was somebody else who was just as distinguished and just as informed who was saying, no, everything is fine. So the reason why common sense is misleading is that, you know, after the fact, it always seems obvious to us that we should have been paying attention to things, but in fact, we could not have known at the time. And so by making the world seem sensible after the fact, it undermines our ability to see the real complexity of the situation.
So it's not a good predictive tool, in your estimation. You also point out in the book that one of the problems with using common sense as a guide is that conflicting scenarios in any given situation can be commonsensical. And to illustrate the point, you use the example in the book of a research project that was conducted with US soldiers after World War II. Can I get you to briefly explain that to us?
Back in 1947, there was this report published that was called The American Soldier, a huge study commissioned by the U.S. War Department. And a bunch of sociologists went into the U.S. Army and interviewed 600,000 soldiers to ask them about how their experiences had been in the Army. And after the war, this book was published, and the great sociologist Paul Lazarsfeld wrote this very interesting review of the book, in which he doesn't just review the book, but he actually makes a more general point about sociology itself. And so what he says, he lists a number of results that the report found. And the second of these results was that men from rural backgrounds fared better than men from cities in the army. And Lazarsfeld then steps back from the review and imagines the reader's response to this result. And the imagined reader says, oh, that's obvious. Of course, men from rural backgrounds did better than men from cities. You know, men from the country are used to sleeping on the ground. They're used to getting up with the sun. They're used to long hours. They're used to hard physical labor. Why did I need such a vast and expensive study to tell me what I could have figured out using my own common sense? And Lazarsfeld then says, good point, except that the results I told you were exactly the opposite of the results that the study actually found. It was, in fact, city men who did better than rural men. And now, of course, if Lazarsfeld had told the reader the correct answer in the first place, that would also have seemed obvious. It would also have been something that you could have reconciled with other things that you thought you knew. So you could say, well, you know, city men are used to working in large organizations with strict chains of command. They're used to regular work hours. They're used to, you know, showing up in something like a uniform. Again, that's obvious. And so Lazarsfeld then gets to his real point, which is that intuition about human behavior, our common sense, if you like, is so rich and contains so many different logically contradictory views of the world that everything and its opposite can seem obvious once you know the answer. And so the real problem is the concept of obviousness itself. And so this is sort of the problem at the heart of the book, is that when everything seems obvious once we know the answer, then we have to question what the utility of obviousness is.
So if common sense is so bad at helping us deal with complex social phenomena, Why do we keep on relying on it so much?
That's a great point. Common sense is not always bad, and one has to be careful criticizing common sense because it is universally considered to be a good thing. And in everyday life, I would say common sense is as good as advertised. Common sense is incredibly good at helping us to resolve and to navigate everyday social situations, like, you know, what should you wear when you go to work in the morning versus going to the beach? You know, how should you talk to your boss versus talking to your children versus talking to your mates at the pub after work? Where the problems arise is that it's so good at helping us to think through everyday situations that we are tempted to use it to think about all sorts of problems that involve other humans, even when those problems are not everyday situations. So if you think about, you know, managing the economy or designing a marketing campaign or planning some corporate strategy, these are all problems that involve understanding why people do what they do and trying to make them do something differently. But they're not people who are right here in front of you. These are not problems that are on an everyday scale where you're in the situation and acting in an immediate sense. They're problems that involve large numbers of people who are all very different from each other, who are all in their own particular context and who are interacting with each other in very complex ways over extended periods of time. And it's these sorts of problems for which I argue common sense is not well suited. But because it's so good at the other kinds of problems, the everyday problems, we're tempted to apply it anyway. And this is where all the difficulties come in.
And we can get ourselves, companies particularly, and organisations can get themselves into very big problems because of that over-reliance, can't they?
That's right. Whenever we think about why people do what they do and how to make them do something differently, we will have spontaneous intuitions. You know, we'll read about some government policy and we'll say, that's rubbish, that shouldn't work, no one will ever do that. Or we'll have an idea for a product and we'll think, this is brilliant, everyone's going to want to buy this. We're always going to have these spontaneous intuitions and we're going to want to make predictions. And those predictions are going to feel very certain to us. We're going to be very confident that we know what's going to happen. The message of the book is that whenever we catch ourselves doing that, we should step back and say, look, I'm probably wrong. I can't help having this intuition, but it's probably not going to be what happens. And so I need to have ways of managing situations, ways of making predictions, ways of planning, ways of designing policy that don't depend on my intuition being right.
And that comes to another idea in the book, which is that making the right prediction, you say, is just as important as getting the prediction right. Unpack that for us.
That's an important distinction because, you know, when we look back at, you know, the last disaster or the last big success, when we, you know, think about best-selling books or successful companies, we always think, oh, you know, we should have been able to predict that. We should have been able to anticipate the rise of Google or the success of Harry Potter or the, you know, the collapse of long-term capital management or the economy or whatever we're concerned with. And so when we look forward, we think, okay, we need to get better at making predictions. But there's two difficulties here. One is that many of the things that we care most about are these sort of black swans, if you will, these sort of dramatic events that depart radically from historical patterns. And these things are just inherently very hard to predict. But what's sort of deeper and more difficult is that if you think about all the things that you might make predictions about, the possibilities are endless, almost infinite. There's an almost infinite number of things that you could, in theory, make a prediction about. And what you don't know is which one of them you ought to make a prediction about, right? You can't make predictions about all of them. That would be overwhelming. So before you even get into the business of how to make a good prediction, you first have to decide what it is that you should be making a prediction about. And again, when we look back in history, that problem has been solved for us because we've already decided what it is that we should have cared about. But we didn't know that ahead of time, and we don't know that going forward. So there's two problems here, and one of them is sort of nested inside the other.
The positive side of your message is that you believe the answer is greater experimentation. In any given situation, in trying to understand the future, we should assume nothing, in a sense, and try lots of things. That's a message that many companies and organisations, they're not going to like, though, are they? Because that involves a lot of time and also a lot of effort and a lot of money.
Yes, I mean, I think you can view this message as bad news, but, you know, I would say, well, that's too bad. That's just the way the world is. But the positive way to look at it is to think for a second about science and go back to your high school experience of learning science and learning about the scientific method And, you know, the scientific method is very simple. You start out with a hypothesis, and then you test it. And you test it by designing an experiment. Usually, it'll turn out, when you run the experiment, that the hypothesis is wrong, and you have to modify it, and you go around in a cycle, and you keep going, and you keep going, and you improve your understanding of the world this way. And viewed abstractly, the scientific method is really just a way of learning how the world works without having any intuition about it, or without having any good intuition about it. And this is something that we accept in physics, in chemistry, in biology, in the so-called hard sciences. We accept that if we want to understand how things work, we need to use the scientific method. And that has been tremendously successful for humanity over the last 300 or 400 years. The problem is that when we come to human behavior, we already have tons of intuition about that. And so we don't think we need the scientific method. And the point that I'm making here is that we do, in fact, need the scientific method just as much as we need it outside of the human domain. And so, yes, it's true that if you don't think you need something, then being told that you need it is you know, seems like bad news. But, you know, as they say in Alcoholics Anonymous, the first part of the solution is admitting that you have a problem. So the first, you know, if we're going to make any progress, we have to be able to acknowledge that the way that we do things now is imperfect and could be better. And to sort of then sort of grasp the positive aspect of that and say, okay, how can I improve the processes that I have? Because, you know, I think that in the end, it's something that we will benefit from, even if it's more difficult along the way.
Well, Dr. Duncan Watts, it's a fascinating book. Thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Anthony.
And it's called Everything is Obvious Once You Know the Answer: How Common Sense Fails Us. Before we depart, some important program information. As many of you will be aware, there are some changes planned for Radio National next year, and one of them involves us. From the end of our summer season, Future Tense will be moving time slots. And that means from January the 29th, you won't hear us on Thursday mornings. Instead, you'll have to tune in at 11:30 a.m. on Sundays. That's 11:30 Sundays for Future Tense from late January onwards. And for the early risers, you'll also be able to catch us on Friday mornings before RN Breakfast at 5:30. So that's the schedule for 2012.